Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, live coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. We have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us for the first hour Dr. Tim O'Shea. And Dr. O'Shea has written a book about vaccines. And this is a fascinating book, and I've learned a lot from it. Now, I wouldn't say I agree with everything in that book, but then I don't agree with everything that anybody writes. But this book is very, very important, because it points out something that I had heard, but I'd never actually seen documented, and that is that the fact that the incidence of most of our major infectious disease and the death from the infectious disease had dropped dramatically from the turn of the 20th century, the beginning of the 20th century, up until 1945, when the immunization became available for diphtheria, tetanus, and whooping cough. And, of course, within the next 10 years, before most people were vaccinated, the incidence of disease had fallen even much more dramatically. And certainly by the time that they introduced the measles vaccine, 44 people every year died of measles here in the United States. Now, those figures are really amazing when you see them. And, of course, fortunately, Dr. O'Shea had given me the source of his information. We checked it out, and it's exactly right on. But it was very interesting. When I tried to get the book from my major university library, there was no way that they were going to allow that book to be checked out. We were able to get the figures and verify this, but it's so important that people understand the problem with vaccines, especially when now we hear that they are passing laws all across America in the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act to forcibly vaccinate people, whether they want to be vaccinated or not, in the name of the public health. And the question arises, is there another motivation behind what's going on? Dr. O'Shea, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Good evening, Dr. Stan. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. And we'd hope to have Dr. O'Shea with us for 2 hours tonight so we could talk about a lot of things. But he's only able to be with us one night. Now you're rewriting the book again. What is this, about the fifth or sixth printing?
Yeah, the fifth printing is selling out, and I'm in the final draft of the sixth edition here.
Well, I'm so glad that you did it, and I'm so glad you put this together. So why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself and why you felt motivated to write this book on vaccination?
Well, the title of this book is The Sanctity of Human Blood, Vaccination is Not Immunization, currently in its fifth printing. Incidentally, the book is available on my website, which is www.thedoctorwithin.com.
All right. Okay, go ahead. And so, well, what made you write the book? Because it takes a lot of effort to write a book, having done it several times. I know how difficult it can be.
To tell you the truth, Dr. Stan, I wish that somebody else had written this book so that I wouldn't have had to gone through all this effort. But no one did. No, as I've been writing this book, no one has taken this subject and completely referenced and backed up everything that they said and organized it in a very readable way so that the ordinary layperson can understand this book and read it in about 3 hours. A lot of the information in it, I'm sure you've read in other places before, and I would read things about vaccines before, but they would never cite their source. You know, like the thing that you just mentioned about how infectious diseases were mostly gone by the time vaccines ever appeared on the market. I would read that over and over again, and no one would ever cite their source. And it took me two months, you know, of research to find that source that you talked about, the Michael Alderson International Mortality Statistics.
Well, in fact, Dr. Lorraine Day had actually called me one time and told me these things. We'd been involved in the battle to try to address the AIDS epidemic as a disease. And she called me and she said, gave me the statistics, didn't give me the source of it. And so I was fascinated when I got your book and read actually how many people died each year from these various diseases right up until the advent of the vaccines. And then even when they were introduced, why most people didn't get them, most children didn't get them. And then realizing how dramatically the incidence of disease had fallen long before the majority of our population were vaccinated because of good health, because of good sanitation, because of introduction of antibiotics. But they never tell the American people this.
Yes, yes, that's right. And it's because you realize also in the book I go into the political structure and the economics behind vaccines. And I also go into the ingredients of vaccines and the culture media.
Well, why don't you sort of get into a little of this, not too technical, because a lot of our listeners don't have the medical background. But certainly let them understand that they're actually putting things like mercury, which, far exceeding the upper limits of mercury toxicity, and they're putting this into the vaccines, and they're giving it to newborn children before they can leave the nursery and poisoning their brains. And they said there's nothing wrong with it. And when the parent groups raised a fuss, why they took it out. So if there was nothing wrong with it, why not continue using it? Why not come up with your documentation, continue using it? And if there is something wrong with it, why did you poison all those children?
Yes. That's very well said, Dr. Stan. The one thing that I want to point out right here is that it's commonly misunderstood, and it's widely reported in the media today with all the controversy about mercury in vaccines, that it is now out of vaccines. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Are you suggesting they're lying to us?
Yes, they're definitely lying to us. And I have two proofs for that, Dr. Stan. The first one is in the current 2002 Physician's Desk Reference on five of the major vaccines. Thimerosal, which is mercury in vaccines, is still included. The second proof is in the insert. You know what that is.
Sure.
The folded piece of paper that comes with every batch of vaccine will state that mercury is, thimerosal, is still in five of the vaccines. That's about half of them.
Well, you know, it's really so interesting. About 6 weeks ago, there were a series of articles in the paper saying pregnant women should not be eating tuna fish because there's mercury in the tuna fish, and that mercury can damage the brains of their infants. So, if the mothers don't eat the tuna fish, you have nothing to worry about because your doctor will be forced, literally forced by the government to give your child shots of hepatitis B shots in the nursery, and of course by the time they get their three shots, by the time they're 6 months of age, they will have far exceeded the upper limits of normal by the Environmental Protection Agency. So you don't have to worry about eating, if you just can't find any tuna fish to eat with mercury in it, why, don't you worry, the government's going to provide enough. Why would they do something like that? And then why would they suddenly say, oh, well, gee, we didn't know what we were doing, when the opponents of this vaccination, and that is the most ridiculous vaccine I've ever heard, you know, there are far more children who had major adverse reactions to the hepatitis B vaccine in 1996 than there were cases in children under the age of 14 in the entire country that year. I think there were something like 246 children with hepatitis B. There were over 800 major adverse reactions that same year in infants all across America to this same vaccine. Why in heaven's name are they demanding that every child gets hepatitis B vaccine when the only child it would help would be one whose mother was already hepatitis B infected? And this is not a problem with children until they become promiscuous and become homosexuals or IV drug users. Why are they giving it to our children in the nursery when there's no justification for it?
Because they can. Because they can legislate it. Because they can add it to the mandated schedule. Hepatitis B is given to children on their first day of life on the planet.
With mercury in it, of course, until
hepatitis,
at least recent.
Yes. Hepatitis B vaccine contains, on the first day of life, they get 30 times the EPA safe dose of mercury on their first day of life on the planet. So irrespective, Dr. Stan, irrespective of the, you know, the microorganism, the hepatitis B microorganism vaccine, let's just talk about that particular toxin and the risk. I mean, what kid on his first day of life is going to be susceptible to a disease of adult junkies? It is ridiculous. It is unscientific. It makes no sense except economic sense. It's a $1 billion per year vaccine.
It's a somewhere between $60 and $80 for each of the three shots you have to have before your child is 6 months of age. Now, in China, they are giving these for a dollar each. You can immunize the people over there because thanks to our immunization programs over there where they've used dirty needles, 700 million Chinese have had hepatitis B infection, 120 million. That's almost equivalent to half of the population of the United States are current carriers. And of course, it's a real problem in China. It's not a problem in the United States. They're simply using their ability to mandate its use in the United States so that you will fund to cover for their mistake in communist China. And of course, in communist China and in most countries throughout the world, they use the needles over and over and over again. That's how they managed to spread the hepatitis C epidemic. 200 million people throughout the world have hepatitis C, most of them from using dirty needles. How could you be so stupid unintentionally?
Good question. Hepatitis C vaccine, that's on the list of in the bullpen vaccines.
Oh boy.
It's coming down the road. It probably will get FDA approval within the next 2 years and be tacked on the schedule.
Well, you know, the frightening thing is that the more vaccines you take, the more you insult the immune system. And I personally had the opportunity of talking to Kenneth Albach, the number two man in the Soviet biowarfare unit. He told me that he had taken 56 different vaccines. He says he's allergic to everything. You can't immunize people to everything. And yet, of course, they've got almost that many vaccines in the pipeline now they're developing to forcibly give our kids.
Yes.
But what's the effect of these vaccines? Do we see any change in the health of our children since this mandatory vaccination came in, already starting in the 50s and 60s?
That's an excellent question, too. That is actually the subject of the other book that I have that is actually out of print, Conventional Medicine versus Holistic, A World of Difference. Now, in the rewrite of this book, which will come out early next year, I do exactly that. I am documenting the geometric increase of common infectious and degenerative and autoimmune diseases, which are not slightly increasing among children. They are geometrically, you know, shooting up off the page within the last 20 years. For example, let's take autism. It's so popular in the news. In 1978, 1 in 10,000 children were autistic. Most people didn't even know what autism was until Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man, until that movie came out in the early 80s. Today, according to the CDC, in some areas of the country, 1 in 150 children are autistic.
And I think what's even more frightening is a recent statistic I read, and it's included in my latest newsletter, which we'll make available to any of our listeners who haven't gotten a copy before, and that's the July newsletter. 1 in 12 children has a disability of one form or another. And we're talking about juvenile diabetes, we're talking about juvenile asthma, we're talking about autoimmune disease, we're talking about autism, we're talking about attention deficit disorder. And of course, at least many of these are related to the insult on the immune system that promotes increased immune or allergic type responses in our children.
Right.
And nobody has an explanation of why it should happen, and yet you can almost track the relationship between the advent of mandatory vaccine programs and, of course, many of these things, specific autism. And, of course, it really started to rise here in America dramatically after the introduction of the MMR vaccine, and, of course, they didn't see it in Great Britain for a decade until they started mandatory MMR vaccination over there.
Yes. I do a summary of Andrew Wakefield's work in my one-day seminar, which I give all over the place. I'm going to be in Portland, actually, next Saturday, a week from tomorrow. But Andrew Wakefield has this amazing chart, and I've included it as a slide on my multimedia presentation, in which he does just what you said. He parallels the introduction of the MMR vaccine in the UK, which was exactly 10 years after it was introduced in the United States. And then he has a graph with two lines on it, the incidence of autism in America versus the UK. And it's most amazing. Have you seen this graph? The two lines run parallel to each other, and then at the time when the MMR vaccine was introduced, both lines go vertically up and off the page perfectly in parallel to each other.
And why don't you explain to our listeners who Dr. Wakefield is? Because this is a very, very courageous man who's been severely punished by the medical establishment in Great Britain. And what was his crime? Why he was concerned about children who were becoming autistic. Well, you tell the story.
Actually, I'm about to write a new chapter on my website, thedoctorwithin.com, summarizing Andrew Wakefield. He's the most misunderstood person. I was in England last month. I had two seminars over there. And I did a lot of research on this. But yes, what you say is true. Dr. Wakefield is a world-class surgeon and gastroenterologist. He's a primary researcher. And he worked at the Royal Free Hospital in London. And all of a sudden, over a short period of time, around 95 and 96, all these parents of autistic children began coming to him, telling him the exact same story, how their autistic child seemed to have a certain type of bowel disease, and they had all gone to their regular family doctors, and they had all told him the same thing, which was, of course he has bowel problems, he's autistic.
Now, of course, the thing was that all of these parents had a similar story, and that was that my child was perfectly normal.
Yes.
Until they took the MMR vaccine. And then, of course, within a couple of days, their personalities became to change. They began withdrawing, and they began developing this this bizarre mental condition. And, you know, after hearing this a number of times, he, of course, began to wonder, what's the relationship between MMR? And then, of course, why did all these children get this intense diarrhea? And, of course, being a gastroenterologist, he set out to discover why. And that was his downfall. It cost him his position at the hospital. Because when you challenge the medical establishment, they're going to come after you, especially when you consider the hundreds and millions and billions of dollars that are at stake in this game that's being played today for the lives and the future of our children.
Well, But what's most amazing, Dr. Stan, is that he didn't even say there was a cause between MMR and autism. He just found the suggestion of it, and his big crime was to say that it needs more study.
And basically what he found, he scoped these children, and these are infants, you know, and you're sliding this fiber optic scope through their lower intestinal tract. And when he could get into this small bowel, he found that lymphoid hyperplasia, which you shouldn't find in children, he found it, didn't find it in normal children, but he did find it in these autistic children with a persistent diarrhea. And when they biopsied it, they found a live measles virus in these lymphoid areas of lymphoid tissue. And so something abnormal had happened to these children, and it involved the measles vaccine, and which is one of the three components of MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella.
Yes, and the amazing thing was he got this Professor John O'Leary from Dublin, who proved with this very high-tech sequencing equipment that the virus in the gut of these children was not from the wild measles itself, not from the disease, but absolutely specifically from the measles vaccine.
Right. And, of course, what happened, of course, is the intestine then becomes inflamed. You get a leaky bowel, and the child begins to absorb a lot of things from the gut, and then these, of course, get into the brain. And some of these children can actually be helped with certain nutritional programs, can't they?
Yes, that's true. But I was at the San Diego Autism Conference in 2000, and that seems to be the subject of the conference. Yes, they can be helped with various nutritional supports and a number of protocols. But my question was, let's ask the big question: what is causing this horrendous epidemic of autism, and let's try to stop it if we can, instead of pretending like it's okay that they get it because we can fix it.
Okay, and it's sort of like the AIDS epidemic. And, of course, what's the solution? Well, let's find a new type of medication, where is this all coming from? But why are we so intent upon treatment rather than prevention with so many diseases? And, of course, the logical thing as a doctor, you want to prevent disease. Oh, no, we've got to come up with a new treatment, more money for treatment.
Right.
But let's never get to the basic cause. And, of course, what's been suggested is not to necessarily to do away with all measles vaccination, but certainly not to insult the child's body with three vaccines. It's sort of like shooting them with three bullets at one time.
Yes.
One bullet, you might be able to survive. What happens to your immune system when it's challenged? And not only that, they not only give MMR. Many times, as long as you're in the doctor's office, let's give you hepatitis B, let's give you some polio, and maybe the chickenpox vaccine. As long as we've got you here, why not just give them all to at one time, the DPT, the MMR, and they'll do that. They'll give six kids six antigens in one day.
Yes, this is one of Dr. Wakefield's points too, Dr. Stan. He talks about the MMR as the triple shot cocktail. Well, as you and I know, none of the triple shots were ever tested as a triple shot to see, you know, the collective effect of giving three shots at once. And as you said, that's not the worst part of it. When you look at the mandated schedule on several days of a child's life, he gets six or seven vaccines all on the same day. And, of course, that was never tested scientifically to determine the cumulative effect of seven in one day. And the worst thing is, as you also know, I'm sure, when a child, for whatever reason, misses a scheduled, you know, vaccination appointment, let's say he misses one on which he was supposed to get six shots, and then he shows up 6 or 8 months later for the next one on which he was supposed to get another six shots, they will give him all 12 at once as a matter of routine.
Has that ever really been done? I've never heard that.
That is a matter of routine. It's happening all over the country. I talk to people all over the country. They all say this happens. This is routine.
Well, I'll tell you what. The problem is, ladies and gentlemen, the doctors are trapped in a system. First of all, they're never told of the deleterious effects. Why? Because, of course, the medical establishment is controlled by the drug companies and by people who work within organized medicine. because they get a cutback. I was part of this whole system for a long time, you know, and you suddenly realize that you go along with the system, you get all sorts of rewards, you get all sorts of benefits. And when I got to be fairly prominent in the California Medical Association, I was suddenly asked if I wouldn't like to go on speaking tours, you know, and talk about things I was interested in. Of course, that would give me a lot of referrals for my back practice. I did a lot of highly specialized back procedures. And of course, I wouldn't compromise my position, but I will tell you that most of them did, or you would become part of the system and you'd become an advisor to Blue Cross or Blue Shield. And there were all sorts of benefits that went along with that, being on the boards of these things. And that's why people go into organized medicine. A few of them are there for idealistic purposes. Some of them are there simply because they want to represent the best interests of the doctors and the patients. But the people who get to the positions of leadership have their own agenda, and especially in government. You know, you are a good boy. You work for the FDA. You compromise your position time and again. And when you leave government, you get a job as maybe the vice president of one of the major vaccine manufacturers. And, of course, with your government pension and your drug company pension, you're made for life. Does this happen in America? Of course it happens. You've run into this story over and over again, haven't you, Tim?
Sure. And you just described perfectly the FDA advisory board, who is the group of people who decide which vaccines are added to the mandated schedule. And they don't even try to hide the fact that all of these doctors, before they were on that advisory board, they served in some capacity as executives or advisors to the large pharmaceutical manufacturers, and they all know that after they're done with their stint on the advisory board, they will go back to the pharmaceutical industry where other such positions will be waiting for them. So, of course, they don't want to bite the hand that feeds them and antagonize these powers while they are in office.
And, of course, if you are, say, a professor at a major university, you, of course, have to get grants to be able to continue doing research and write papers. And, of course, if you don't have the right papers, well, it's the old adage of publish or perish. If you don't publish papers, why, of course, you lose out. You don't get your promotions. And so we find out that these doctors in the academic field will, of course, come up with conclusions that have no basis at all in science. And as a result of that, they get massive grants from the drug companies. And this is beautifully brought out in Barbara Loaf Fisher's wonderful book, A Shot in the Dark, which will be available from my ministry very, very soon. I just finished reading it. Have you ever had a chance to read that book?
Oh, yeah, Harris Coulter and Barbara Loaf Fisher.
Right.
It's one of my sources.
Isn't that an amazing, amazing story of how they knew that they were damaging the brains of these children and causing mental deficiency, and they simply changed the statistics. They lied, and in effect, they lied, and they lied, and they lied, and they said, this is a perfectly safe vaccine. There are no evidence at all. It's a problem. They kept telling the doctors that. And so when parents would come in and say, gee, after I had my DPT shot, my child had a convulsion and was disoriented for several days. And the doctor, because he's been lied to by the medical organizations and by the drug companies and by the government as well, why he goes ahead and insists on the next shot. And maybe the next shot or the next shot will result in permanent mental disease, permanent convulsions or death. And the doctors have not been told the truth. And then, of course, after the parents' groups finally created such a fuss after thousands of our children, American children's lives had been destroyed, why then they said, well, now we've got a better vaccine. But, of course, they had it all along. They just didn't want to use it because after what would you do with all the bad vaccine you had?
Right. And that's the other problem with vaccines like thimerosal containing, at one point they actually will take the mercury out of vaccines, but millions of doses are stockpiled and they never expire. And that's why with the coming new, the bioterrorist smallpox vaccine issue, they plan on using. I mean, we stopped vaccinating for smallpox in the United States in 1971, but we still have millions of doses stockpiled, and they plan on using these stockpiled doses that have been sitting around for 30 years, pretending like they'll be just as good as they ever were.
And of course, the thing is that they're not going to throw away vaccine, even though it should be thrown away, and they will use it. In fact, now that they've stopped giving anthrax to everybody in the military, they're stockpiling it for civilian use in case of a biological attack. What's wrong with this picture? Well, they stopped giving it to the military because they were going to lose, a significant part of the Air Force. The Air Force Reserve officers said, we're going to quit. If you force us to take that vaccine, we've seen so many of our friends permanently damaged and incapacitated. We're just going to resign our commissions. And at that point, only then, when there was a massive outpouring of indignation and anger on the part of the Air Force pilots, cost them $6 million to train every one of them, that they finally said, okay, well, we won't insist on giving it to everybody. We'll just give it to those going overseas, and we'll stockpile the rest of it for use on the civilians.
Yes.
And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about your life and the lives of your children. You need to get the information. How can people get in touch with you and go to one of your seminars? You and I wouldn't agree on everything, but we'd agree on so much, and I don't hesitate at all to recommend your seminars. Because, in fact, one of my friends, Dr. Mike Lund, attended it recently, told me how impressed he was at your seminar. So how can people get in touch with you and attend one of your seminars?
My itinerary is on my website, www.thedoctorwithin.com, and that's how people can get a hold of me and find my next seminar. There's several in Southern California, in Arizona, mostly in the Western United States, although I am going to Chicago in November.
That's thedoctorwithin.com, and well, we can't give the price on the seminar and this program, but people can get all that information going to the website. And we're going to have to take a quick break here. We're going to take a 3-minute break. If you'd like a cup of coffee or a drink of water, and when we get back, we'll invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Because remember, men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And if you're not involved in getting the information and helping us to disseminate it, maybe it'll be your child or your grandchild, or maybe it'll be you when the government comes and says, you have to be vaccinated because of that wicked Saddam Hussein who we left in power intentionally back in 1990, but of course, you're going to have to be vaccinated now because we're from the government. We're here to help. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we hope that many of you out there will realize that you're going to hear things on Radio Liberty you're never going to hear before, but we research these programs very extensively, and if you'd like a free copy of our June or our July letter, both deal with the subject of vaccinations, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. You can request either the June or the July newsletter. If you haven't had a newsletter before, we'll be glad to send you one free of charge. And, of course, you can go up our website at radioliberty.com and pull down the two newsletters we have there on vaccines. We'll tell you the incredible story of the polio vaccination and the fact that they've been lying to the American people for 40 years about what they knew back in 1960, but they didn't want the public to find out because you'd lose confidence in them. And, of course, these are the elite. These are the public health officers who are supposedly there to safeguard the public health. The same ones, of course, who created the Tuskegee study where they recruited 412 black men to kill them, to withhold treatment in them so they would die and they could autopsy them. And there is an elite mentality out there of people who are so far superior to you that, you literally don't have any right to life, especially if you happen to be black. And that was the attitude between 1931 and 1971 when this 40-year program was undertaken. And I've talked to public health officers who to this very day justify that, saying, the 55 that survived live longer than their counterparts, there's no evidence we did them any harm. But what about the other 350 or so that died, and many of them were autopsied, and they died of the disease that was allowed to ravish their bodies because the public health establishment wanted to find out what would happen. How could this be in America? You need to get our 4 tapes out on the Tuskegee study. Get the information. We have interviewed many of the people who were involved who studied this whole issue. one that something that would have made Dr. Mengele over in the Nazi death camps blush with envy, and it occurred right here in America. And it didn't end until 1971 or 72, when a courageous young man had the courage to take on the whole medical establishment and saying, you're not going to be allowed to continue killing those people. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this carries over to many other things, and you better get informed. And we're going to tell you things here on Radio Liberty as long as we, God give us a microphone and a voice to get the truth out. You need to get the information. If you'd like to get in touch with our ministry, and you would like to help us in what we do, our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. And if you're not involved now, when will you become involved? When it's somebody else's children? When it's your children? When it's someone in your family? Perhaps it'll even be you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're not involved, then you become part of the problem. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Tim O'Shea. And we welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this evening, Dr. Tim O'Shea, and Tim has been studying this for some time. He's put a great deal of time and a great deal of effort into this, and he's accumulated information that you need to know about. Well, let's talk about the swine flu vaccine. Now, that's a perfect example of how the public health department is out there, and boy, they're here to help us. And but somebody made an awful lot of money out of the swine flu vaccine. The epidemic didn't develop, but an awful lot of people became very ill, and many of them were either paralyzed or killed. Why don't you tell that story, Tim?
This story is really told really well by Jim Turner, who is he's an old lawyer in Washington. He's been around forever since the time of the swine flu. He was one of the original raiders. And if anyone wants to really hear him tell this story, a very powerful story, you can get a videotape. I think it's actually free or really inexpensive, from a website called www.protectmedicalfreedom.com. They're in Washington.
No, is that the state of Washington or Washington, D.C.?
Washington, D.C.
Protectmedicalfreedom.com. .com. And what's his name again?
His name is Jim Turner.
You don't know how to get hold of him, do you?
You could get hold of him through that website.
All right, fine. I want to get him onto one of our programs. So why don't you tell the story? And, you know at least part of the story. And I think it's something that people have to understand. How, through the use of the media and through all sorts of stories that they kept putting in day after day after day, they frightened the American people into believing there was going to be a swine flu epidemic, and there was no evidence of it. There was no reason for it. But, of course, anybody who invested in those companies that made the vaccines, I bet made a lot of money, didn't they?
Yes, they made a lot of money. They created a crisis, as Jim Turner said, and he even has evidence that shows how they created a disease itself by taking the virus and peeling back the capsule to make a much more virulent strain of virus that was put into the subjects than would ever have been possible in nature. And then when they tried this totally untested vaccine on thousands of people, 400 children immediately died, and several thousand other became permanently damaged.
That would give Guillain-Barré syndrome, or these,
yes,
neurological diseases. Now, but didn't they give this to an awful lot of people? How many people? Do we have any idea how many people actually got the vaccine when they said, oh, everybody's got to get these flu shots, and weren't they giving them to a lot of older people? What happened?
Yes, it was. It was all ages, and they were planning on vaccinating everyone in the United States. And they stopped it. Turner has the exact number, but it was several hundred thousand doses were given out. But people started dying so fast.
From the vaccine, not from the disease.
Exactly. There was no disease. That was the point. There was no disease. It was a preventative of an imaginary epidemic that never existed. It was created by the media.
And it's sort of like the smallpox epidemic. Everybody knows it's coming, And yet for years they've been telling us there's no smallpox in the world. That's why we don't have to vaccinate anymore. Now they're telling us there is a threat, and it's the wicked Saddam Hussein, or maybe the wicked, no, it wouldn't be the wicked Russians, because there is no wicked people in Russia anymore. So where is the smallpox going to come from? Well, maybe Saddam Hussein might have stolen someone and kept it in a refrigerator someplace. It's amazing you can convince intelligent people of anything if you say it often enough. It doesn't matter how ridiculous it is, people eventually will believe.
Yes, that's what Hitler said.
Right. Okay, fine. So there are over 400, how many children died?
Like 476, I believe, is the number.
Okay, and a lot of them were permanently crippled, and of course government ended up paying out hundreds of millions of dollars for the people who made claims for this thing. But of course, why didn't they go after the vaccine manufacturers? Oh, we couldn't do that. We don't want to hurt their feelings. What about the polio vaccine? I'm sure you've looked into the story of the polio vaccine, and to this day they're covering up the truth about it.
Yes, well, there's so much on polio, and I go over this in the seminar and in my book, The Sanctity of Human Blood. One of the main things, as you remember, when polio vaccine was first being cultured, it was originally cultured on the kidneys of African green monkeys, and after 10 million doses had been so cultured and injected into American school children, they discovered this virus called SV40, simian virus 40, which is normal in monkeys but not normal in humans.
Actually, I think it was rhesus monkeys, wasn't it? Could that be that the original was rhesus monkeys, then they changed to green monkeys or African green monkeys? But those are only details. Go ahead.
Yes.
So then they find out they've got the simian virus 40.
Yes.
A cancer-producing virus, and they've given it to millions and millions, not only of children, but of adults as well. And because everybody was concerned about polio.
Yes, and there are, it's been written up in many of the peer-reviewed journals. In the past 10 years now, there's a lot of evidence that tries to link the introduction of the SV40 virus into the American bloodstream in the mid-50s as a latent virus responsible for the onset of AIDS in the early 80s. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is just what you said, Dr. Stan. Earlier this year, actually in March of 2002, there were two separate university studies, one at Texas Southwestern and the other at Baylor, that showed a 43% incidence of SV40 virus in non-Hodgkin's lymphoma patients.
All right, now this is simply a lymphoma that doesn't come from Hodgkin's disease. It's a specific type of lymphoma, and a massive increase in non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. It's gone up, I don't know, 40-50% here in recent years.
Yes.
And so many of these actually are contaminated with the simian virus 40, and they say, well, so what does that mean? Well, it means that everybody who did any study and cancer production of cancer knows that simian virus 40 produces cancer in animals. It produces mesotheliomas and brain tumors in hamsters. It produces bone tumors in other animals. It produces lymphomas in other animals. In fact, this is such a carcinogenic virus that it was the basis of the first genetic mapping ever carried out. And they wanted to find out what was the genetic makeup of this virus that produced cancer. So maybe then we could help to stop cancer. And before they ever did the human genome, they did the genetic makeup of the SV40 virus. They know this produces cancer, but how do you tell the American people that we gave 90 million doses of this, and then, of course, we didn't want to throw away any of that, so we knew it would contain cancer-producing virus, so we continued giving it until, I think, some 95 million doses were given. But long after they knew that the virus was there, they continued giving it to the American people because they didn't want to pull it off out of use and have to admit what they'd done. They'd
Yes.
made a terrible mistake. And then, of course, they changed from one species of monkey to another, and that's an entirely different story, and some evening we'll discuss that.
Okay.
And, of course, the other viruses that they have introduced, the monkey viruses they've introduced into human beings. and they have contaminated the entire genetic makeup of our entire nation. And the average individual has no idea of this because of the degree of control that exists over what the American people think, and people are dying of SV40-produced viruses today, virus-produced cancers. The incidence of mesothelioma, almost non-existent in the 1950s, now about 3,000 every year in America. Fortunately, it's a rare virus, but the brain cancers aren't. The brain cancers are on the increase, and of course, a significant number of those have the SV40 in it as well.
Yes.
And how have they been able to keep this from the American people? I mean, you would think that the American people understood that we had already been under attack from sloppiness, stupidity, and then, of course, lying about it and covering it up and then continuing to use up the supplies because, well, after all, it'd be too expensive just to throw them away.
Yes.
It would really cut into the profits. I mean, how can they justify that?
Just by what you said, by control of the media and by repeating it over and over again, the mantra that this vaccine, this polio vaccine, is safe and necessary. On my website, The Doctor Within, I have a chapter called The Doors of Perception, in which I sort of summarize the rise of public relations and media for the past 100 years. And after you read that chapter, hopefully people will be more skeptical when they watch the evening news or when they read an average, you know, health article in a newspaper.
Well, I hope they will, and I think that it's so vitally important that people have to understand you are responsible for your health. Don't look to the public health department. Because I've had public health officers come to me in the past and say, Stan, we know what you're saying is true. And, of course, this is talking about the AIDS epidemic. But we can't back you publicly. But you keep up the good work. These are not bad men. These are men who just want to survive. They don't want to lose their jobs by taking a stand. I don't know how I was able to survive as an outspoken critic of what was going on with an organized medicine during the years I practiced. Maybe God was looking after me or keeping me for what's going on now. But under any circumstances, there are a lot of people who know, but they don't have the courage to speak out.
Yes.
And, of course, when at a time, Dante said in his book, The Inferno, the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who, in a time of moral crisis, maintain a position of neutrality, and I would say, and also a position of silence, knowing that bad things and wicked things are happening, and yet they do nothing.
A really good illustration of that point is, I think that Andrew Wakefield is eventually going to be proven right, and he is actually going to prove scientifically and conclusively of the connection between MMR and autism. And he's very close to that now. But what I'm wondering is, why is this guy out there all by himself when most other legitimate scientists in his field, because this guy is a pure scientist, they know that he's probably right, but he's out there. There's this one other, Dr. Singh, but the two of them are out there by themselves, and the entire medical research community is holding these guys completely at an arm's length, waiting to see what happens to them.
Well, remember what happened to Semmelweis, who over 150 years ago said that doctors were killing their patients by doing autopsies and then not washing their hands before they did vaginal deliveries on women who were delivering children. And he was hounded out of the medical profession, died in an insane asylum.
Right.
What was his crime? He was trying to save the lives of the women who went to the hospitals to deliver their children.
Right.
And, of course, this story has been played out time and time and time again. There has always been those heroes who would take a stand. And then, of course, most people would rather go along and get along than stand for what's right. And that's why, of course, we have to speak out. And while I'm so pleased that you're out there, and I know you're reaching people, I know my friend who attended your lecture really had just nothing but praise for it.
That's great.
All right, so what are some of the other issues, some of the other vaccines? Because there have been so many disasters out there. The yellow fever vaccine that we created at the beginning of the Second World War to protect our boys from yellow fever in the South Pacific, and but they forgot to check it ahead of time. 28,000 American servicemen got yellow fever, and 100 of them died. I don't know how many eventually died of the chronic hepatitis, that they developed because of the what happened. But we never talk about that sort of thing, because lots of times they develop these vaccines, they just don't bother to check them. What about the rotavirus vaccine? That's a recent story of another time that they had this wonderful, wonderful vaccine that was going to stop childhood infantile diarrhea. And then I think we had only, 30 or 40 deaths of that every year in the United States. And most of that was simply because of neglect. All you have to do is rehydrate the children. They do fine. It's a real problem in third world nations, but not a problem here. And yet they demanded every American child get a copy of shots of this expensive vaccine, three or four of them before they were 6 months of age. What was the story there?
With the rotavirus?
Right.
Yeah, the rotavirus was a vaccine that came on the market in 98 and lasted about 18 months. It was pulled off the market in 1999 when there were just hundreds and hundreds of cases of intussusception. That means where the children were developing, again, these lymphoid nodules, these autoimmune swollen nodules within their, baby formative intestines. And the intestines were telescoping up, and some of them were dying actually from that intussusception. When they finally realized this, they pulled the vaccine off the market after only 18 months. Well, my question is, if they pull it off after 18 months, where was the research proving that vaccine was safe when they put it on the market? And if they didn't know enough that it was safe, why did they start out the mandated dosage at 3 shots?
And of course, the thing is that the research did show it was a dangerous vaccine, and the research did show that children died, and they ignored it.
Yes,
and of course, because there were big bucks to be made in this.
Yes.
And oh, think of all the good we can do for the children. We can stop infant diarrhea.
Yeah.
And how many children? I think there were a couple that died, but all these children had all the complications. Eventually, of course, they had no choice, because the only reason they pulled it off the market was because opponents, these people who've given their lives to trying to get the truth out, had created such a ruckus that they figured, well, maybe we better back away from this one. Yeah. But if it was safe when they put it on the market, why did they pull it off? And if it wasn't safe, why did they put it on the market? Why are they experimenting on all the children in America? And that's it. They mandate these things, and the doctors are literally forced to give these shots to the children, some of them right in the nursery on the first day of life. Now, that wasn't the rotavirus, but that certainly had to be given before the first 2 months of age. And the child system is not prepared for all these immune insults.
I think we should spend a few minutes here, Dr. Stern, talking about the next thing that's going to be worse than that, and this is really going to be happening, and it's the coming AIDS vaccine. And that was what protectmedicalfreedom.com, that was the focus of these people. This is a group in Washington who held a press conference in June of 2001, and what we know for a fact is that people like VaxGen and AlphaVax and these large manufacturing companies have been testing AIDS vaccine throughout the world for about the last 4 years or so. And but instead of $150 million, which is a usual figure that is being spent on developing a new vaccine, over $400 million has been spent on this AIDS vaccine. $250 million of that is from Bill Gates himself. I mean, they don't try to hide this either. But the point is, this vaccine is very close to being mandated, to being tacked on to our mandated schedule.
Well, now, why would they do that? The only reason you're going to get this is if you're a promiscuous or an IV drug user. I mean, you can't get it from mosquitoes. At least they keep telling us you can't get it from mosquitoes. And so you get this because of what you do. Why force children to take a vaccine?
Yes.
Are we going to, by giving a vaccine, like you got to get out of jail free card, then you can be as promiscuous as you want to?
Well, the result of this press conference was this. This is how they think that the AIDS vaccine is going to happen. just like with the new hepatitis A vaccine, which was added to the mandated schedule in January, and no one knows that. I don't talk to one doctor in 100 who even knows that.
What is that again now?
The hepatitis A vaccine.
Oh, that's the one that they want to give selectively to the Mexicans, right?
Yes, but it's also, when you read the last sentence says, or anyone seeking protection from the disease.
Right.
So they're giving it out en masse to children across the country right now. That's in the new high-risk category.
Okay.
But
that's not given to all children yet, is it? I thought they were going to selectively vaccinate the Mexicans with that.
That's the idea, Dr. Stan, but the way it's being presented to people, it's hepatitis A and the influenza vaccines are the first two vaccines in this new high-risk category. And it's up to the individual clinic, the individual doctor, but the way it's being presented, I'm hearing people all over the country telling me the same thing. They say, okay, now little Johnny has got his regular shots today. The doctor also recommends these two shots for protection against these diseases.
What's even more frightening is they're soon going to have these things, you'll just be able to sniff them. And, of course, they get this into your system through the respiratory tract. And they want to come up with vaccines that will immunize you against one vaccine against everything. What's going to happen to your immune system when you get all of those antigens at one time?
But I want to tell you about the AIDS vaccine, the coming AIDS vaccine, Dr. Stan, while we have a minute here. It's very important. What these people are saying in this conference is this. Yes, we are $400 million into the research of the AIDS vaccine. It is very close to being tacked onto the mandated schedule. It will be put into this high-risk category with no fanfare. There will be no media. You will not hear about this when it gets approved, just like the hepatitis A. Nobody even knows that that's approved. It's been approved and in use since January. Okay, now, who is going to get this new AIDS vaccine once it gets approved and tacked onto the schedule? The high-risk groups, gays or parents of HIV, mothers of HIV, you know, HIV-positive mothers? No. It's going to be given across the board to the general public. No, not the general public, to all 12-year-olds. That's who the target market is for the new AIDS vaccine, all 12-year-olds. They will give it to all 12-year-olds. Then maybe 6 months later, they'll start leaking little stories about how successful the new AIDS vaccine has been among the American children, the population. But this is the most important point right here, Dr. Stan. The child who gets the AIDS vaccine will be HIV positive, and then they will say that the presence of HIV antibodies in this child's blood means that they're immune to the disease, instead of the way it's always been for the past 20 years, the presence of the HIV antibody in the blood means that you are going to get AIDS. That bait and switch, that is very likely that is going to happen within the next 2 years.
Well, I think that the things that are happening are really frightening in their implications. And, of course, can you trust them? No, you cannot trust them because they've lied and they've lied and they've lied. And if you like my newsletters, I would be glad to send you free copies of them, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Let's get your website out there just once again, Tim, so people will know how to get in touch with you.
Sure. It's www.thedoctorwithin.com. And the book is called The Sanctity of Human Blood.
All right, fine. And I think you'll find a great deal of important information there that you're not going to get elsewhere. And you need to understand the history of vaccinations in America has been, in some ways, they say, look at the success. We're not seeing people dying of measles. But what they don't tell you is that almost nobody was dying of measles before the vaccination. Nobody's dying of diphtheria, but almost nobody was dying of diphtheria before the vaccines came in because of the increased the public health, because of sanitation, and mainly because of antibiotics. And so you're not getting the true story. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners this evening?
Parting thoughts is I tell people, even if you believe in vaccines these days, for parents of children, small children, pregnant women, even if you believe in vaccines, find out about the exemption forms, especially in California. It's so easy to sign the exemption forms. That way, then when these new bioterrorist experimental vaccines come out, the power will be where it belongs, with the parent. The parent will have the right to pick and choose the vaccines that they want for their child.
Amen to that. And, of course, the other thing that I would certainly point out is they're saying you can't come to our government schools unless you're vaccinated. And I say to parents, that's the best reason I know to take your child out of the government schools, because the government schools are dangerous to their moral health. And if they're going to insist that they be vaccinated for hepatitis B, when they're 5 years old to get into school, and you know the incidence of adverse reactions to that vaccine, and the number of children who've died of the vaccine or developed progressive degenerative changes, neurologic changes, you'd never want to have your child given that, because the risk-benefit ratio is all on the side of the risk, and, of course, nothing on the side of benefit. Tim, it's always a pleasure. I hope we can get you back on again. How soon will you be done with the book so we can get you on again?
Give me a couple months here, Dr. Stanley.
All right, we will. I appreciate you being with us tonight, and next time we'll get you on for the full 2 hours. Good night. God bless you.
Always a pleasure.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, I hope you enjoyed the program. And, of course, we forgot to say goodbye to our listeners up at the Great Northwest, and so we're going to, of course, take a quick break here now, and we'll be back in just a couple of moments with the next hour, and we're going to have as our special guest John Leffler. I was going to say Dr. John Leffler, but John Leffler will be with us. You won't want to miss that, and so don't even think about changing the dial. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And if you're out there across America, of course, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us right now on the line from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, John Leffler. And John was kind enough to come on short notice. As you know, I've been away on vacation, and I got back and I found that Dr. Shea had originally agreed to be with us for 2 hours tonight, could only be with us for 1 hour because he's writing the book. And I know when you get on a roll, why you sort of hate to give it up, but he was willing to be with us an hour. I hope you enjoyed that program. And so I called John and said, John, would you give me a hand tonight for the second hour so that I don't have to just talk all by myself? And, of course, John's always one of my favorite guests. And there are so many fascinating things going on today that, of course, you're not getting the truth about through the regular media. And, of course, John's statement is your failure to be informed to do research doesn't make me a wacko. Is that true, John?
Tends to be. The hardest issue, I was talking at dinner last night with one of our state representatives here, who is one of the few gentlemen who actually reads all the bills that he, you know, that he votes on. And we were comparing what's going on in politics. And I said to him, you know, the hardest problem that we have is not that we have problems, nor that we have solutions to them. We have both. What we have trouble with is convincing people that there is a problem. And the reason for that is that the majority of people get their news from Peter, Dan, and Tom. Peter, Dan, and Tom didn't tell you that there was going to be Islamic terrorism, but we did. You know, we started telling people that in 95, and within 30 days of 9-1-1, one of my shows, was a good part of the show, was devoted again to the coming Islamic terrorism. Of course, a month later, we were proven correct. So you and I both know that if you just go out and ask the hardball questions, and you know, and whenever I hear anything come out of a politician, I always ask what's going on here, because nothing, absolutely nothing that comes out of our state capitals or the national capital in Washington should be taken at face value. There's always an agenda driving it in which the public is being manipulated.
And I think that's absolutely true. I don't know if you heard our program this last hour.
Yes, I did.
Talking about vaccines, but why this is so important and why I want every one of our listeners to get a copy of my newsletter, either off the web or we'll send them a free copy if they haven't had one before, is because this is something that affects everybody. And especially our last newsletter going in, and the last two newsletters are so important. If you can get others to read them and understand that they have contaminated the entire population with SV40, and you got up 45% of sperm specimens taken from adults in the United States contain this cancer-producing virus. And, of course, that's just the beginning of the story. I mean, it goes from one thing to another. But maybe people aren't too concerned about the malaria in Africa because it's killing blacks over there. But the West Nile virus in America, why, that's a terrible, terrible thing. Of course, the logical solution would be to use DDT, but we don't allow that because we allowed them to outlaw that back in the 1970s, and it was specifically outlawed to kill blacks in Africa. Because, of course, malaria was no longer killing so many blacks. And DDT had saved 60 million, maybe 100 million lives. Some people say 500 million. We couldn't allow that to continue. But it didn't affect us. But West Nile virus, maybe there are only 5 cases in Louisiana, but it could get into Idaho. It could get into California. And then it would affect us. People have to understand we are all involved in this. Man is not an island. And when people are dying in Africa or in Louisiana, part of us is in jeopardy as well. Maybe this issue will be something that will jar people out of their apathy and indifference. At least we have to try, don't we, John?
Well, we try because I think the reason, if I have to ask myself, why have I done this program the last, how long have we done it, 12 years, 13 years, my
right.
own show?
Right.
It's because I care about the small guy. I care about individuals. And every day, I know, I'm not sure if it's the same for you, but we get calls from people who get tangled up in messes from social services to the IRS to all sorts of, I mean, everybody's, first of all, with the crimes being the way they are now, we all commit crimes every day. I was just reading an excellent book by Professor Charlotte Twite from State University of Boise here in Idaho. And the Cato Institute has put it out. And she's looking at the databasing of American citizens. She said it is virtually now complete, and because there are so many rules and so many regulations, everybody's guilty. And she said now we have selective enforcement of the law, and what we're subject now to is bureaucratic arbitrariness. So, and she's right about that. And I'm finding every single day there are all sorts of people that get tangled up in this system, which is being driven largely by bureaucrats. It's less and less in control of our public officials. And as a result of that, it's really a system that's out of control. And it's beginning to grind up thousands of innocent people. And the only reason somebody comes and be aware of it is the fact that suddenly it grinds them up unexpectedly, or it grinds up one of their friends or whatever. And then they go, well, this is America. It can't happen here. Well, it's America, but it is happening.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's happening because the average individual thinks it will never happen to them. And it's so reminiscent of that Reinhold Niebuhr's Niemöller's remark about, you know, first in, they came for the communists, and I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the Jews, and I wasn't a Jew. And so I wasn't concerned. And then they came for the members of the Workers' Party, and I wasn't a member of the Workers' Party. And then they came for the Catholics, and I wasn't a Protestant. I wasn't concerned.
Right, but in that case, at least they know people were being come for.
Well, of course, they are coming for them now. We've got an awful lot of innocent people in prisons in America today. We know the FBI sent one man to prison for 30 years, and they knew he was innocent. And they sent him there to cover for a murderer that they were intentionally protecting. And if you haven't read that book, Deadly Alliance, the story of how the FBI has been working with the mafia for the last 30 years, or members of the mafia, and protecting them, and people like Wazzy Bolger, that book is available through our ministry. People need to understand that we have corruption within the FBI. They're good FBI people, but when they try to do something like Colleen Rowley, pointing out that they knew that Zacharias Massari was a training for a kamikaze flight up there in Minnesota before the 9/11 attack. But of course, when they sent the report into Washington, D.C., somebody changed the report so that there would be no justification for getting into the laptop computer. Why would they do a thing like that? Unless, of course, there were people in Washington, D.C. Who would not want to have evidence of the attack beforehand.
Well, what you're seeing here is you're seeing postmodernism on steroids. We came into this postmodern era, it's flooded into the church, and basically the tenet of postmodernism is that there is no such thing as absolute truth or absolute value. Since we have now raised three or four generations of people on this, these people now have positions of authority and power. But if there is no absolute morality, then they have no twinges of conscience about doing whatever works. In other words, it falls down to the pragmatic. Nowadays, I remember I just talked this week to Professor William Anderson from Von Mises Institute, and he said we now have government by pragmatism, by postmodern influence, because it's simply what you can get away with, and how badly can you torture and twist the laws into getting a conviction or whatever it is you're trying to do. And that's why for you and me, see, we grew up in a different school. We believe in a set of moral rules, and that the law should follow these moral rules. In their case, they don't care. They just care if they can apply the technicalities of the law and make them stick. And to give you an example, I was talking to the state representative here in Idaho, and he said a gentleman that he knew here that brokers airplane sales sold an airplane to a couple of guys that ultimately wound up running drugs in from Mexico or something. And they couldn't get a lot of money out of these guys, but they managed to tie him in on RICO statutes and seize all of his assets, $250,000, $300,000, and put him in prison for 2 years, whereas the guys who were doing the drug running only got 6 months. And the reason is why? Well, you see, now we have a government that many of its agencies are engaging in rapine plunder of the American public. And this was a study that was also confirmed, I think it was done by the University of Kentucky in forfeiture, and it shows that the forfeitures are now being fine-tuned to maximize the seizure, not maximize the penalty or get the real criminals, just maximize the quantity of money and assets that can be forfeited and taken.
And you know, one of the tragic things is people justify that as, well, this was the traditional British Admiralty law, when there were pirates around, and if pirates were caught, all of their assets were seized, and that was perfectly legitimate under British Admiralty law. And so they've taken this over, and they've incorporated it into the law of the United States.
Right.
And without a person being convicted, without a person being guilty of any crime at all, they can come and seize literally everything you have. Maybe you have a house rental, and somebody is using drugs in that house. Well, they can seize your house. Well, how can they do that? Somebody can steal your car and use it for transporting drugs, and they can seize the car. There doesn't have to be any rhyme or reason, but this is, the government always needs money. And of course, they're not concerned if there is no right and wrong. Why don't they just come up with a reason to take your property, as they did with this one man down in Southern California? They wanted his property for a park, So they accused him of having drugs, and they went in, and when they broke in, he thought it was criminals, and I don't know whether he had a gun or not, but anyway, they simply gunned him down. They broke into his house, didn't announce who they were, they gunned him down, they killed him, and then it turned out there weren't any drugs there. So they gave his wife a couple of $100,000 to keep her quiet. And that's how the game is played. This happened in the United States, and no government official was ever convicted of a crime.
Listen, to this day, no government official has ever been punished for seizing all of Carol Ward's assets, even though she got them all back and won that lawsuit. No one's has ever been really appropriately punished for the debacle up here, right near where I'm speaking from right now, at Ruby Ridge, which everybody knows was a government debacle. That's the danger that we're in. And now we look at the databasing here that is virtually complete. And so the government is now capable of snuffling through records. And, you know, I mean, like I said, we're all guilty of something, Dr. Stan. And so sooner or later they can make trouble for anybody that has to be. And so the laws are now selectively enforced. That's the real bad part. So blind Liberty, not only is she not blind, she's also deaf, dumb, and stupid now. Because there is such corruption at the federal level in the judiciary that achieving justice there is very difficult to do. When somebody wants to be, when they want somebody to be gotten, they can. There's enough buckshot they can throw at him, and then if you can seize his assets, well, then he has nothing with which to put up a defense, and so then you're stuck with a public pretender. I'm sorry, defender, and of course he just rattles through. It's a drill, as a friend of mine once said that was involved in something like this. He said, they know the drill, and they just all rattle through it. It's nothing but a game and a charade, and they get what they want. Not everybody's prosecuted. It's only done selectively to those who were not politically correct.
Well, what they will do is they'll take, you know, and they'll accuse you of 75 different crimes that will put you in jail for 500 years. And then they'll say, plea bargain, and, you know, admit it, and we'll put you in prison for, 6 months and fine you a certain amount of money. But if you fight us, we're going to destroy you. Now, that is totally unfair. This fellow is Zacharias Massuia, the so-called 20th bomber. Now, the government is going to put him on trial, saying he was part of, he was to be the 20th flyer. We don't know whether that's true or not. But what are they going to do? What are they going to show the jury? How are they going to prove it? Well, they're not going to try to prove it. They're going to show the jury all the pictures of all the people who were killed. And they're going to show them the weeping relatives. They're going to show them, the collapse of the World Trade Center. They're going to have the tapes that were taken to the firemen that day. And they're going to use the emotion to convict him, I don't know whether he was to have been part of that or not. He said that he was actually sympathized with Al-Qaeda, this group that we originally financed, that were the followers of Osama bin Laden. And, of course, anybody who doubts that we originally financed Al-Qaeda needs to get this wonderful book entitled The Forgotten, Forbidden Truth. I've had a difficult time getting it, but now we have it, and it's available through our ministry. And, of course, we financed the Al-Qaeda initially. In fact, we financed the Taliban right up until the very month when we decided we were going to go to war with the Taliban. And they gave them an ultimatum, which we knew they couldn't respond to. But whether this gentleman, Zacharias, is a good man or a bad man, that you do the facts. You don't play emotional games with people's minds, which is what they did, of course, with Timothy McVeigh. There's no question at all that Timothy McVeigh was involved, with the bombing. But, of course, they couldn't prove it because they refused to show the video cameras shots that were taken in front of the Murrah building on the day of the explosion, because they would have showed the other Arabs who were involved in that, and had the American people understood that this was an Islamic attack as well as involving Timothy McVeigh, who incidentally had written his sister and said that he was part of a special forces unit involved in criminal activity, had they had to tell the American people about the Islamic connection to the bombing of the Murrah building, why, maybe there would have been such an outcry, we wouldn't have had September 11th.
Yeah.
So they had to conceal the truth, and they had to convince the jury, not on facts, but on emotion.
Right, and unfortunately, enough of the people, again, thank you, thanks to the dumbing down of America, the jurors go on to juries not knowing their rights, and the judges and the prosecutors steer the jury toward the predetermined outcome. And it takes some sort of a courageous jurors on there who go, well, that's all nice. Now let's look at the issues. You know, we may have technical violations here. Is this really...
Are you talking about jury nullification?
Jury nullification, right. And the fact. And a lot of times they will now think, like in the case of, who was it, Mr. Sanders, you know, in the case of the evidence for TW-800, they don't allow the broad panoply of issues related to the case to be presented. The judge steers this thing, you see, to determine a conviction. And so I'm always telling people now, you know, if you're on a jury, if there's not, beyond the shadow of a doubt, it's a no, not guilty in my mind, okay? Because I know how this system is played. It's a system now, see?
It has nothing to do with justice or right and wrong.
Correct.
That is the tragedy. At one time, we had justice based upon the Bible and God's law. And, of course, we've taken God out of the law. And when you take God out of society, you lay the basis for moral anarchy.
Right. So that's and that's what people just need to understand. This is how it's functioning. Now, that doesn't mean, I'll be honest with you, that there really aren't real criminals, are there? See, this is where it gets all sort of messy, Stan, is I remember talking to a police detective from Portland, and he was having a hard time. I sent him some of Paul Craig Roberts' articles on the whole debauching of the justice system. He says, oh, I know, I see this every day, yada, 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 and therefore, you know, he really doesn't know what he's talking about. But what he doesn't understand, that's sort of like saying if you ask someone, well, how many cases of AIDS in your household? And you say none, and then my response is, well, then that means that there is no AIDS in the world, right? See, that's the kind of logic that they're using, is to say that just because there's no, you know, because I don't see it, it can't exist. It's an uphill battle, like I said at the beginning of the show, is to make people understand that what is really going on is not being reported by Peter, Dan, and Tom, and it will affect you. That's an important thing for them to understand.
Well, I think that the last thing is the most important. It will affect them. And, of course, that's what I do, and I suspect that's why you do what you do. It's that old adage that you can't sell life insurance until you can convince people they're going to die. You can't get people involved in this whole battle, which is really a spiritual battle being fought on an ideological battlefield, but you can't get them involved until they understand that they are involved whether they want to be or not. And
right.
If they don't take a stand now, they may very well never have a chance to take a stand. Well, our telephone number, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment, you agree or disagree, our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest is John Loeffler, host of Steel on Steel. Man sharpens man, steel sharpens steel. And, of course, John is heard on our program on KFER every Wednesday evening from 7 to 8. And if you don't listen to it while you're listening, you're missing one of the most important parts of our weekly programming here on KFER. And, John, how can people get in touch with you, get in touch with your ministry, or maybe even get your tapes? You can't tell the price, but you can certainly tell them how they can get in touch with you.
Well, first of all, call us at 1-800-829-5646, 1-800-TAX-JOHN. We'll send them a list of the shows we've done because they're available by tape or online. You can go online to www.steelonsteel.com and hear them there. So that's either way. And we're a weekly program now, of course. We 90 minutes a week of things that are going on out there that you really need to know.
And, of course, it's one of the high points of the week, hearing John's program. And the other thing is, of course, we have a great four-tape set on the wisdom of Malachi Martin. And the fourth tape is not one that I did. It's one that John did. And it's the most amazing revelation, really, of how the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church worked from a Jesuit priest, a man who for many, many years was a Jesuit priest. Well, we've got Susan calling in from Santa Cruz. Hi, Susan. How are you doing?
Hi. Doing great. Thanks for the talk tonight. What do you gentlemen think of the headlines about a lawsuit on 911?
Okay, that's an interesting question. What do you think about the lawsuit on 911? Now, Susan, there are a number of lawsuits. Are you talking that?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, of course. They're not going. You don't think Peter, Dan, and Jan, and Don are going to tell you the truth?
No, I don't wait for them
fine.
To tell me.
let's get John's take on that, and then I will tell you what I just learned this last weekend. But
okay.
John, what do you think about these lawsuits against, and I'm not even sure who they're against. Well, some of them are against Saddam Hussein for his involvement. And, of course, others are against the airlines for, not having adequate security. And then there's another one, and that's the one I'm going to tell you about after we've got John's input. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I have not been following them, so I don't have a lot of, I saw them this week briefly. I've been tracking more the last couple of weeks the implications of the so-called war on terrorism on American citizens.
All right, fine. Well, let me answer Susan's question first. First of all, there are a number of lawsuits, and the government is opposing all of them. Why? Because under the lawsuit, you can get discovery, and then you can begin to get information. And the one thing the government doesn't want is any sort of an investigation or question on what we are supposed to believe happened and who is behind what happened
mm-hmm.
on September 11th. Now, we had actually infiltrated Al-Qaeda. We knew what was going to happen. If you doubt that, we have in the article out of the USA Today that points out that out of the 350,000 pages of documents that the CIA turned over to the Intelligence Committee was the fact that, contrary to everything the American people have been told by Peter, Dan, and Don, right, that, we had actually infiltrated Al-Qaeda, and we knew they were going to hijack our planes and crash them at the World Trade Center. If you want that, give us a call. You can call the station, leave your name and address. We'll be glad to send it to you. The government, first of all, there's a group of people, relatives, who want to sue the airlines. Well, the government doesn't want that. Oh, no, we're going to give you $1,850,000 or something like that. Now, just don't sue the airlines. You won't get anything at all. You'll lose your chance, You're going to come out with nothing. And then, of course, there's another group that wants to sue Saddam Hussein. And, of course, based upon the fact that there was a definite connection between Osama bin Laden and, of course, the bombing of the Mura building, and then, of course, a bombing, tie this into Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden together. Well, the government sort of likes that, if not too bad, because they got to have some moral justification for the coming war on Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, they don't want to get too far into that either, because it could open a can of worms if you begin to subpoena government documents. And the fact that we knew all along that there was an Islamic connection to the bombing of the Mura building, and not only that, but, of course, many of the people involved were people that the State Department had brought to America. We brought somewhere between 3,500 and 5,000 radical members of the Republican Guard, the Saddam Hussein's Republican Guard, to the United States after Desert Storm. And, of course, we've allowed them to set up terrorist cells all across America. But the biggest issue is something I found out this last weekend, not in any American newspaper, but in a foreign newspaper, and that is that a lawsuit has been filed against Saudi Arabia.
Yes, I think that's part of the...
Against Saudi Arabia, which, of course, 15 of the 19 terrorists were Saudi Arabian citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Saudi Arabia has been financing with Saudi money the Al-Qaeda and the bin Laden movement under the guise of, don't attack us, so we'll finance you so you can attack other people, but just leave us alone. Well, whether that's really the truth or whether, of course, Saudi Arabia, which has always been a surrogate of the United States until recently, and, of course, their intelligence agency and our intelligence agency, the CIA, we're sort of one and the same. Well, imagine the implications. Why, of course, the Saudi, 15 of the 19 terrorists were Saudi, Osama bin Laden is a Saudi. Of course, this whole idea that Osama bin Laden was stripped of his citizenship and was persona non grata to his family and the Saudis is simply a farce. If you haven't read the book, Bin Laden, it's called Forbidden Truth. We carry that excellent, excellent book. It's written actually by a Frenchman who's been studying the bin Laden family for 6 or 8 years. And their ties into the Bush family, Mr. Carlyle, this mega corporation that George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush and Frank Carlucci and James Baker. Remember, he was the guy who was down in Los Angeles there, pardon me, in Florida, making sure that George Bush got to be the president, James Baker. All of these people come from Carlyle. They were working hand in glove with the Bin Laden family until, of course, I think just a few weeks before or after 9/11. And I think they actually dropped out immediately before, almost like they knew it was going to happen. Well, all of these ties tie in our establishment to the Saudis, to the attack. And, of course, who was financing the attackers? Well, if it was Bin Laden, but if Bin Laden was being financed by the Saudis, why are our allies involved in this whole thing? And if they were involved, why have we kept that fact from the American people? If there's an editorial within the Wall Street Journal in the last couple of days pointing out the Saudis have been financing the Islamic terrorist movement for years. Mm-hmm. But then we cover that in a wonderful book we have written in 99 called, oh my goodness, the name escapes me, it'll come in just a moment, but it was written by a Swiss journalist, and of course it goes into the fact that the whole Islamic terrorist movement, written in 1999 by a Swiss journalist, that the Islamic terrorist movement was financed by Pakistan intelligence, the American CIA, and the Saudi Arabian. So this comes from so many different sources, but of course Peter Dan and are not going to tell you about that.
Well, I was I just briefly read part of the headlines of this article today about this lawsuit of about 600 survivors of the World Trade Center.
Now, where did you read about that? Because I just got back, and is that coming out about the lawsuit against the Saudis?
Yeah, Saudi and the U.S. government.
Great.
And that's all I know, and I think it was in the San Jose Mercury, I'm not sure.
All right, fine. Well, I haven't got to yesterday's San Jose Mercury or today's San Jose Mercury. I'm glad that it's getting out in America, because you better understand the involvement of the Saudis and the American CIA in financing the Islamic terrorist movement. The book is Dollars for Terror, mm-hmm. and we do carry that. It's very almost impossible to get. Mm-hmm. John, what are your thoughts on what's been said?
Well, of course, one of the interesting things about the lawsuit is something that Larry Klayman recognized really early on. What politics may try to bury, you can bring out into the open by means of discovery. So in that case, the lawsuits have a positive side to them, because now you can put facts out in the public record that otherwise would just be stated by wackos like you and me, you know, that type of thing. I mean, that will be the public thing. Now, once it comes out in discovery, then it's a matter of record. It's very much the same way that Congressman Ron Paul and going back to earlier congressmen, if you're like Larry McDonald, used to just spend a lot of time reading things into the congressional record to make them a formal piece of documentation. Mm-hmm. And so they have the advantage of doing that. The interesting thing is, the question is, why can't we say that? See, this is the question I've started to ask now. I'm sort of keying off Dr. Dennis Cuddy's book, Waiting for the Next Shoe to Drop. Why are we so hot going after Saddam Hussein? I mean, he's been around for 12 years. Now, as of today, the Israelis are saying, you've got to get this guy and you've got to get him now. And, of course, if Saddam believes that the U.S. is going to go after him, he's just paranoid enough to be able to, you know, his chemical weapons program is still pretty much intact. I know Joel Skousen doesn't think so, but I tend to think it is. And
John, we're going to have to take a three-minute break here. And do you want to hang on, Susan?
Sure.
Okay, fine. We'll be back in just 3 minutes there with John Leffler. And Susan, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we hope that many of you out there will decide that you want to join the Radio Liberty family, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day, and I have two programs on Saturday, and actually we're going to take on an additional 17 stations, sort of on faith, hopefully, that people will believe in what we're doing. That's going to mean our Saturday program, our half-hour Saturday program, will be going out to over 32 stations across America, in addition to all the other stations we have. And, of course, it's all expensive to do, but we do it because we feel America's worthwhile sacrificing for. And if you agree with me, we hope that many of you will want to consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and, of course, helping us get the information out, telling others about our radio programs, that there's an opportunity to hear information here you're not going to get elsewhere. And, of course, we also hope that you'll tell them about our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com, and you can go there. You can listen to Radio Liberty 3 hours a day, to our program on the American Freedom Network at 7 o'clock Pacific time every morning. And there's a link there. And then, of course, a reference to the Genesis GCNLive.com, GCNLive.com program, which, of course, can be heard at 3 o'clock Pacific time every afternoon, a shortwave broadcast satellite internet. Of course, many of our programs are archived there on the internet. So you can actually get 60 or 70 of our archive programs there. So if you'd like to learn more about Radio Liberty, if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, and if you haven't had one before, we'd be glad to send you probably our last July newsletter dealing with vaccines. Again, the number 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, remember the website. It's RadioLiberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. And get your friends listening to the archive programs. We find that many times when people start listening to programs, they think they're just a little off, a little crazy. And after a while, they're afraid we're not. But that's what it's all about. I mean, when you first hear these things, how could that be true? How could the media in America be controlled? Well, you need to get our material on thought control and mind control. We even have a media packet which goes into the background, not only of what we say, but what people on the other side say. People from the Washington Post say about the degree of control that exists over what the American people think and who really sets the policy. And believe me, it's not our elected representatives. Again, our number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today. Our future, our freedom, our families are under attack today. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and our special guest this evening, John Loeffler, from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and of course, locally we have Susan calling. Let's see, Susan, did you have something else you wanted to say?
Well, yes. I have some fuzzy math for you. Since I don't get a very good response as an individual from my congressman, for example, I wrote him a letter that I didn't want the health empowerment, you know, that...
HIPAA, H-I-P-A.
Yeah, thing. Yep. That passed, and he wrote back, well, I'm pleased to tell you that it's, to see that it's scaled back, and so I didn't get a yes or a no from him. I got a yes. I think that's what that answer is saying, that he does like the fact that it was scaled back, and he will vote for it. But anyway, I didn't get much response from him. So I figured there's roughly 3,000 people or more that were killed at the World Trade Center. And if they have the minimum 5 relatives each that are really motivated and concerned, then you have a large block of people, 15,000 people, that if they were the slightest bit informed might be a real block of, you know, power and inquiry into this issue. That was what struck me. But
all right, fine. Well, what we really need to do is get them and every American to know a lot of these people, some of them relatives there, are being offered, you know, $1.85 million. Sit down, shut your mouth, and we'll give you $1.85 million. There are a couple of relatives, there's one specifically, who says, I'm not interested in the money. I want to find out the truth about what happened that day. The government is frantic. No, you can't do this, you know. You know, we're from the government. We want to help you. We want to be on your side, you know. Let us have all your information. And but, of course, if you carry this case, why, you're probably not going to end up getting anything. And there are a few people out there, I just hope that the lawyers that they have are not plants, as happened, I believe, in certain instances with what happened at Waco and, of course, the Oklahoma City bombing. So anything else you want
to
say,
it.
Susan?
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Nice to talk. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, John, what did you think about Susan's remarks there?
Well, the dilemma right now, as I see it, is trying to, like, she's run up against a common problem. The Congress people that go there, as well-intentioned or whatever, sooner or later they get taken over by the system itself. half the time a lot of these provisions run through these bills, and basically the Congress people quite frequently are voting on the titles of bills, not on what the content. And very critical little things go roaring through in the name of something else. There'll be provisions buried in bills that have no, you know, no connection to anything else. So now the problem is, how do you get this under control? And the average person out there does not understand that these things are happening, and so therefore, if you don't understand they're happening, and even if you do, how do you get your Congress people to understand it? So that's the dilemma that you face.
And of course, you know, we've seen how the power of government can be brought down upon innocent congressmen, as they did with Don Hansen, 10 to 15 years ago up in Idaho. In fact, he committed no crime at all. They simply targeted him. They came up with phony regulations. They sent him to prison. They tortured him. And, of course, finally they said, oops, that law didn't apply to you. It's too bad, Don. Well, we've ruined your career. We've ruined your health. You've been tortured. And we're just going to let you out of prison. The government had no authority at all over that. Isn't that a mistake? You know, how do you justify something? How do you pay somebody back for something like that? And where is the moral outrage? Why do they want to get him? Why, Don Hansen wrote a book called To Harass Our People, the story of how the IRS was harassing our people. He was a patriot. He tried to expose this whole phony hostage crisis, the Iranian hostage crisis. The Iranians were quite willing to give us back the hostages. We didn't want the hostages back. I mean, some of my interviews with Don Hansen would make you almost want to cry, and yet, of course, every congressman back there knows that they can get him if they want to.
Yeah, I think you're talking about George Hansen.
George Hansen, right? I'm sorry, right.
Yeah, that's right. You and I have a particular problem on our show, and it has nothing to do with senility. It's the fact that we're swamped with too many facts trying to remember and put them all together.
Well, you know? It may not be senility on your part. You're not quite as old as I am.
Yeah, I've just got Alzheimer's disease. That's
right.
What it is. Yeah. You know, I'm not sure how where the next jump is going to be, because that's what I'm sitting here. I was just thinking today, remember that H.G. Wells' book, New World Order, Blueprint for World Revolution, that was written back in the 30s, he said ultimately the whole new globalist government was going to be laid in place following the Third World War. In other words, he said there was a third one coming that would start somewhere near Basra, Iraq.
I think that book is so vitally important for our listeners out there. This book was written, somewhere in the mid-1930s.
1930s, right.
Right. And he talked about the Second World War. He knew
right.
all about the Second World War. And then, of course, he talked about the Third World War. How did he know? Well, I would like to suggest, ladies and gentlemen, H.G. Wells was part of this little group of people working behind the scenes, and most of what's going on today has been scripted, absolutely scripted. And if you think that these things are happening, or we are doing, I mean, here, 15 Saudis attacked the World Trade Center, says we go to war with Afghanistan, and then because 15 Saudis attacked the World Trade Center, now we're going to go to war with Iraq. The American people never would have gone for this previously, but now so many people say, oh, yeah, we got to get Saddam. We got to have a preemptive strike. Nobody talks about the Constitution, that only the Congress can declare war.
Declare war, right.
Right. Well, we've got Lorraine on the line. Hi, Lorraine. Where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm calling from Southern California. I wanted to talk to you guys about this Camps for Citizens, this article out of L.A. Times. It was talking about Ashcroft, how he wants his plans now that were disclosed last week. He wants to incarcerate United States citizens and just strip them of their rights.
Okay, and under what pretext?
If they're just like a threat, like an enemy, you know,
right, well,
ready for
that
combat
would,
or whatever.
People like you and me who believe that we're not getting the truth from the government. Yes, they've had these plans in place for a long period of time.
Yeah, there is no provision in the Constitution to strip people of their rights. I think Dr. Keyes posed the strongest objection to this whole thing. He said, we have a serious issue here. If we can go to somebody like Jose Padilla and we can say to him, you're an enemy combatant and therefore you don't have any rights, he said, just by the fact that they have applied the label enemy combatant, suddenly you even lose the ability to prove that you aren't an enemy combatant in a court of law.
And of course, I think the most interesting thing about Padilla is how did they know he had a conversation with a couple of members of Al-Qaeda about creating a dirty bomb? Incidentally, there are no dirty bombs. There's never been a dirty bomb, and it would be totally impractical to create a dirty bomb, because if you created one, you'd probably die of radiation poisoning yourself. But obviously, they were monitoring the conversations that infiltrated Al-Qaeda. In fact, the Al-Qaeda people may very well have been government agents, but because he had the conversation, he comes back to the United States, they arrest him, and they deprive him of his rights to citizenship. Now, Lorraine, if they can do that to him, why can't they do that to you?
Oh,
and if you don't believe that there's a plan, we actually have the Iran-Contra hearings for Congressman Jack Brooks. You can see that on our video on the in the concentration camp special, or we actually have something called a sampler, and you'll hear Congressman Jack Brooks trying to bring out this at the Iran-Contra hearing, saying, you know, I understand there's a plan to suspend the Constitution in case of a national emergency, and Senator Inouye keeps interrupting over and over again. We can't bring that out. We can't talk about that here. And then, of course, the next clip is Congressman Henry Gonzalez, former chairman of the House Banking Committee, saying, there really is a plan, in case of a national emergency, to arrest American citizens and put them into concentration camps. And that video, the sampler, or the concentration camp special, has actually pictures of these camps. They've been around for a long period of time. This is nothing new. Everything has been scripted, heading us towards where we are today. And you can be sure, of course, if you are one of those radical people, like maybe a Christian, why, you will certainly be a candidate for that, because certainly Barbara Marx Hubbard, former Democrats candidate for the vice presidency in 1984, ran against Geraldine Ferraro. And Barbara Marx Hubbard talked about the necessity of killing those a quarter of the population that will not evolve to a higher level of consciousness. Who do you think she was talking about? If you want to actually get that, we have the pages from her book,
and we'll be glad
to send them to you.
I've gotten a lot of stuff now to where I kind of see what's going on. It looks like to me they're going to be taking our rights away, and they're going to make the UN look really good, like, because they're rights-oriented and
right.
All that. They have their charters.
Right.
And they're going to come in and save the day.
Yeah, well, of course.
That's what it looks like to me.
Well, Lorraine, are you listening to us on the Internet down there?
Well, right now I can't, because I can't talk on the phone. But yeah, I have the radio, and I can get you on the radio or the Internet.
I'm so glad that you can. And so please keep listening, and please tell others, and help us to get the information out.
Because, okay.
Oh, John and I can only reach so many people.
And, I know.
We both work as hard as we can, but you've got a circle of friends, and your friends have friends. So just get the documentation and show it to them, and it's just like the whole nightmare is you're waking up, and it's really, really happening.
Yeah.
And also remember that it's the Lord's battle. Don't let it get you down.
Yes, I know. I trust in God. Good. Okay. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And our telephone number again, 888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And by the miracle of the Internet, we can talk to Lorraine in Southern California and people all across the whole world with this program. So go ahead, John.
Well, I think that the critical issue is what bothers me more than anything is I've heard people like Jay Sekulow on Jay Sekulow Live, and a lot of these conservatives who for 15 years have been talking about mom and apple pie and the founding fathers, for the sake of politics, are just climbing on board, almost yelling Heil Bush as they go, and willing to just blow our constitutional rights right to the wind. Now, we've already suffered huge losses anyway. You know, the liberals tend to torture the Constitution until they get what they want out of it. The conservatives, historically, for the last 20 years, have just blown big holes in the side of it. And we're at the point right now, this is a core issue. What constitutes an enemy combatant? And if he can be plastered with it, so can I. I mean, recently we saw about a week ago where this judge said we have 1,200 people. 1,200 people, Stan! Being held incommunicado here without being charged, without even knowing who they are, etc. This is just such a flagrant violation of habeas corpus. Why the outrage isn't just pouring out of Capitol Hill, I'll never know, except for the fact that we now have a dumbed-down population that doesn't have any idea why we have these rights and why they have to be safeguarded. And the stupidest argument that I have heard, and I can't say this more passionately, is that we're going to defend liberty by wrecking it. Explain that one to me.
Well, I'm really very concerned about some of these so-called conservatives who have always said in the past exactly what we believed. But now they are, of course, going along, and we just got to go to war with Saddam Hussein without understanding. If we go to war with Saddam Hussein, he has a right to attack New York. I mean, we're at war with him. What makes you think that there won't be an Iraqi ship a few miles off the shore there with a Scud missile on it? How could you possibly object to his counterattacking? And I believe, and I have other sources of information, that if we go to war with Iraq, there is an excellent likelihood that we will have a major attacks, not attack, but attacks, here in America that will result in the total chaos. And, of course, out of that chaos will become the justification for John Ashcroft, Christian John Ashcroft, and George Bush, Christian George Bush, to declare martial law and begin rounding up people and putting them into the concentration camps that have been in place not just since they came to power, but you know, going back many, many years, going back actually into the Reagan years, the years of Reagan's presidency.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally, I mean, first of all, what is the connection between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden? See, no one has established that. Have you noticed that, Dr.?
But there might be. I mean, aren't they both Arabs or something?
There's more of a connection with Saudi Arabia, or friends and allies in the Middle East, than there is with Saddam Hussein. Saddam's been there for 10 years since Desert Storm. He's been sitting there. We didn't do what we needed to do. He was kept around as a bad boy. When they needed somebody to whip, he was going to be there, and we knew that.
The best enemy money could buy.
The best enemy that money could buy. Now, suddenly we have to get Saddam, and I'm scratching my head, why? What does he have to do with this so-called attack on America?
Because
there isn't any.
This has been planned for a long period of time. I mean, in fact, you can go back. I don't know if you've ever interviewed Laurie Milroy, but of course she wrote a book, I think, Saddam's Attack on America, attributing the first attack on the World Trade Center to Saddam Hussein. And she had a lot of excellent points, including information from James Woolsey, former member, CIA director, CFR member, and of course, supposedly the fellow in New York who was the head of the FBI. He was also the guy who knew the attack was coming on the World Trade Center back in February of 1993 and did nothing to fend it off. But of course, her book was interesting enough as who published it. Why, it was the American Enterprise Institute. Who's on the board of the American Enterprise Institute in the late 1990s? Why, Paul Wolfowitz, Dick Cheney. And at that time, they were demanding an attack on Saddam Hussein. I mean, this was 4 years ago. They were trying to justify an attack on Saddam Hussein at that time. And now they've got the justification. What is the justification? Why the wicked Osama bin Laden attacked the World Trade Center. And you're absolutely right. What's the logic behind it? And where are the pundits saying there is no logic? Why should we go to war with Saddam Hussein? You poke a stick at a rattlesnake, he strikes you back again. But if you leave him alone, many times you're not going to have any problems. And, of course, I think that the worst thing is for the leaders of Israel to encourage us to do this. But, of course, many of them are simply puppets and extensions of the American power structure. They do what they're told to do. And, of course, then it gets the Jewish population of America to support that. And that's the worst thing in the world. Right now, they've got enough problems over there without a major war in the Middle East. And maybe if we just quit. Maybe if we just quit financing. The Russians were financing Saddam Hussein. Where is this Saddam Hussein getting his weapons from? Where is he getting his military advisors? Well, he's getting it from Russia. Who's financing the Russians? Well, you pick up your paper almost every day, and you'll find we're finding one or another excuse for funneling money into Russia. Oh, we've got to do away with their nuclear weapons, so we're going to finance them doing away with their nuclear weapons. Of course, they're building new nuclear weapons. They have plenty of money for that and for giving
Not to mention selling things to the Chinese.
Right.
And also funding the building of Iran's nuclear reactors, which can be used as breeder reactors for plutonium and things of that nature. So, you know, it's amazing how you see this picture. What frustrates me, Stan, is I turn on the pundits on the cable channels every night, and it's blabberty, 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 and they never get to any of the core issues. It's like we're living on two different planets when you put together the stuff that we manage to assemble versus what they do. The real problem, like you said, poke a stick at a rattlesnake. Look, We don't have the military we had during Desert Storm 12 years ago. It's been eviscerated and emasculated. The Chinese are waiting to move on Taiwan as soon as we become preoccupied with something else. I wonder what that something else could be. The rest of the Islamic world does not look very favorably on this, et cetera, et cetera. And so, this is a big can of worms that really has nothing to do with the war on terrorism.
And, of course, even more than that, I don't know if you've read Joel Skousen, one of his latest briefs, but he's talking about, he fears that if we go to war over there, we're going to use it as a pretext for invading Saudi Arabia to protect the oil fields. And, of course, reading some of the articles I've been reading since I came back yesterday, I find now that we're beginning to see on the editorial pages of the Wall Street Journal, and for those of you who don't know, this is, of course, part of this whole mouthpiece for this secret establishment that rules America. The editorial pages of the Wall Street Journal tell you what they're really up to. And what are they talking about? Why those nasty Saudi Arabians are financing terrorism. Well, they've been financing it for years. Why are they just finding that out today?
Right. Why the spook now on the whole
right.
thing?
Right. And, of course, I think that we get our troops over there and we invade Saudi, we invade Iraq and we invade Saudi Arabia and maybe Iran. We're going to be in, a quagmire that, you'd think Vietnam was a quagmire. When would we ever be able to get our troops out of there?
Right. Plus, we have no replacement government over there, even if we do get involved. The point is this is poking a stick at a rattlesnake. There's another agenda afloat. That's all there is to it. There has to be, because it doesn't make rational sense when you ask the hardball questions.
But it will eventually, we'll eventually see it. I was back in 1979 when we toppled the Shah of Iran and brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power. And at the time I said, this doesn't make sense. Why would we topple an ally, with the sixth largest military in the world and a faithful ally of the United States,
right,
and bring the radical Islamic Shiites to power, the Ayatollah Khomeini? Why would we do that? Doesn't make sense. Well, now it does make sense. Once again, we've created a very effective enemy. We've created the Islamic terrorist movement, which Iran is a very, very important part, right along with Saudi Arabia. And the two of them are working hand in glove together, despite the fact one is Shiite and the other is Sunni, but of course they have a common hatred, and that is the United States, the great hatred.
And it is not, Dr. Stan, as if we have not done things to be offensive to them. See, that's the flip side here, is the average, look, the average American has never spent any time overseas. They have no idea what's going on in other countries. I lived in an Islamic country for a year. And they don't understand what we're doing, how we're doing it, and how it insults people. Look at the radical position, for example, at the United Nations conferences that our government takes, trying to force birth control and abortion and everything down the throats of Islamic countries and Roman Catholic countries, and they view that as being the opinion of the U.S. government. They don't realize that the delegates to the U.N. are pushing a very radical agenda that even many, many Americans would consider radical. That's a side that people just don't see here in this country, so they don't quite understand why people are all upset with us. I mean, after all, we've given away more money to more countries than any other country that I know about, and yet we still seem to have so many enemies. What is going on here? This does not make sense.
Well, it doesn't unless you understand what we're doing is financing
exactly
the dictators in all of these countries. We're financing a dictatorship in Egypt. Mubarak may be elected, but they don't allow any opposition. We're financing the military dictatorship in Algeria. We're financing the dictatorship in Syria. We're financing the dictatorship in Turkey. We're directly financing and helping maintain the dictatorship that exists in Saudi Arabia today. And we wonder why the people who live in those ruthless, tyrannical dictatorships are unhappy with us?
Right. Anyway, that's the situation. What I'm concerned about is what happens with the next shoe. Because if we start talking about right now, there's enough outrage on the part of people about what's going on. Ironically, Dr. Stan, it's the liberal side of the ledger right now that's screaming about this whole issue.
And, of course, the conservatives are saying why these liberals, they just don't understand. It's going to be, it's going to be Neville Chamberlain all over again. It's going to be appeasement. Of course, we can't have appeasement. We've got to take a strong stand against the real enemy, Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, but Saddam Hussein didn't blow up the World Trade Center. See, that's where we come full circle. And I agree with you. And to be real honest, okay, the liberals have spent so much time torturing the law to find rights in it that don't exist and to twist it to meanings to forward some of these radical agendas. Now when they say something worthwhile, nobody's listening. And in Washington now, it's all partisan politics, even the whole issue of the Constitution. Fortunately, you have a few groups. You know, you've got the ACLU on the left, and you've got John Whitehead and the Rutherford Institute on the right, and Cato Institute, and they're all screaming about all of this stuff.
Well, I hate to say that I'm solidly with the liberals on this, but somebody's got to say we're getting into another Vietnam, a quagmire that will make Vietnam look like a picnic.
Look like a picnic because this is going to draw huge piles of other countries into it. You know, there's one thing that people need to understand about the Islamic mindset historically, all right? They may squabble with each other all the time and wind up killing each other. But when there is a perceived external enemy, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. That is a historical thing. And no matter whom we attack, whether it's Saddam Hussein or Osama bin Laden, it is not sitting well in the Islamic world. And not only are we talking about the type of attack you were talking about, Dr. Stan, but they command enough money to be able to collapse the U.S. economic system just by playing the right games on the global market. Indeed, that was one of Osama bin Laden's goals.
Absolutely. And then, of course, the other thing is that starting with the Immigration Act of 1965, we began bringing in radical Islamic people. We've allowed them to come in. I don't fear Al-Qaeda, but I do fear the Islamic terrorist cells, not associated with Al-Qaeda, but ones that we've allowed to be set up here. And we've kept this truth from the American people. And there's just enough of them here when the word is given. That, of course, will be facing really very, very real problems.
Right, and frisking little old ladies at airports isn't going to do a thing.
Hey, John, we're out of time. God bless you. Thank you so much for being willing to come on with us. I hope it's been a fascinating program for our listeners, and I hope you've enjoyed being with us tonight.
God bless, Dan. It's always fun.
Right, thanks. Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, that was John Loeffler, and John's always a pleasure to have on with us. And I hope you enjoyed the program as much as I did. We've got a great lineup for you next week, so be sure to continue listening to our Radio Liberty programs. Tell others about our programs, about our website, and then please pray for America. Pray for, not to God to bless America, but for God's mercy on America, because we have become a pagan nation. As a nation, we've repudiated God. Pray for his mercy. And then pray for our ministers, our leaders, and please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. We'll be back with you Monday. Until then, may the Lord be with you.
Have some action tonight, anyway.